This is Artist Stories, a podcast that centers experiences of artists whose lives have left a lasting imprint on the Southern Arizona creative ecosystem. I'm Janae Sanchez.
And I'm Ami Robles. And today we welcome Herod Blank, visionary, multidisciplinary artist, filmmaker, and founder of Art Card World. Herod, thank you so much for joining us today on Artist Stories. Can you introduce yourself and talk to us a little bit about your connection to the Southwest?
Okay, my name is Herod Blank, and I am from California. I was raised in Santa Cruz, and in 2005, I had a problem in that I had all these art cars, and I had nowhere to park them. So I started looking for a place to relocate. Actually, I was in Berkeley, California at that time, and I approached the city of Berkeley for support in building this museum, and they actually asked me to leave because they said that art cars had no economic value to the city of Berkeley. And, you know, I've been doing the Art Car Fest for years, and we attracted a lot of tourism, so I thought that was a really crazy response. And so then I looked at coming to Douglas, Arizona, because I had friends in Bisbee, and I do like Mexican culture, and I do speak some Spanish, and I thought this could be a good fit. It's good for the cars because of the lack of humidity.
Can you tell us a little bit about the history and how this movement has shifted over the years, and now is there's a hub in Douglas?
Yeah, so what happened is that the art car artists that I knew and were doing events with back in the late 90s, this was in the San Francisco Bay Area right before Burning Man, and there was all these artists doing lots of crazy things, and art cars were just one of them. As we got older as artists and our cars got older, we needed a place to put them and take care of them. And they are a huge responsibility. So back then, it was mostly people in their mid-20s to 40s, basically. And they were doing these art cars and traveling around and doing events and parades and festivals and all of that. And Burning Man. And then as everybody aged, then the cars kind of got to be in some ways a burden because they had to be maintained and all of that. So it sort of fits the transgression of the whole art car thing from the late 90s to now, where there's still events, but there's not as many young people doing it. And the art cars sort of needed to have a home. So that's where the museum comes into play. And it just so happens that I picked Douglas, Arizona to do this. And so that's where it's going to be. It's now the world's largest museum for art cars. And there's some other ones too. There's one in Trinidad, Colorado. There's one in Houston, Texas. But we have, I think, a collection of more of the significant art cars around. And it's gradually getting more popular and people are knowing about it. But to be honest with you, I really haven't worked very hard in promoting it because I'm not there yet. You know, I really wanted the museum to be further along before I started to do the promotion. And then recently there was an investor man who came into Douglas and started buying up the whole town. I thought that he was, you know, going to do justice to Douglas and really make a difference, but it was actually a farce. What that did was it got me to try to open the museum, which we did for Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays from 11 to 7. And we've been open that way ever since. As of December of 2020. Yeah, December of 2020.
It's so amazing that you ended up in the Douglas Agua Prieta area. Like, it's so cool. I remember when you started like fixing that building, my family and I would drive by and we were like, what is that? Like, that looks cool, but what is that? We could have never imagined what that building was going to be fixed for. That is what downtown Douglas needs, just more art. Since you opened up and have like a couple of hours for people to come by, What has been the response from the people in Douglas, the people in Agua Prieta? Has it been positive?
Oh yeah, it's been a very positive response. Almost everybody that comes into it, their eyes are opened wide, and they've never seen anything like it. And especially in Douglas, they weren't anticipating that they'd see a collection of 27 of the most amazing art cars in the country. But it's not like, again, it's not something that I don't think everyone knows about yet. And I've kind of kept it on the down low for a reason, because I really wanted to create this place and get it running without, you know, having issues or roadblocks or whatever. You know, I'm not sure I could do this in any place else in the country. When you see what I'm building, this is going to put Douglas on the world map. I'm not kidding. It's actually going to be one of the largest sculptures of the reclamation of large scale industrial materials in the world.
Oh my God, that sounds cool.
It's not just about art cars anymore. And that's what I'm trying to, you know, I want the whole community to be integrated into valuing art and self-expression as being the pinnacle of what we live for. And it's contagious. This is a thing. It's contagious that if people understand the new value system, then they will start making art themselves, and they will start bringing everybody else around them up instead of bringing them down.
Yeah.
And that's what this place is going to be. Everyone's going to get lifted up eventually.
Herod, off the top of your head, what's your favorite art car? What art car has impacted you the most?
Well, there's a car that's called the Mad Cad by Larry Fuente. And it really blew my mind when I saw it in person back in the 80s. And it's very meticulously done with beads and soles of shoes that were leather and pink flamingos that were completely encrusted with jewels and beads. And the whole thing is covered in resin, and it's very majestic, and it represents the opulence of America in the 1950s. It's just an amazing work, and by an amazing artist. And so that's one of the art cars that, to me, it's the upper echelon of achievement in art cars. And it's just amazing. I like all art cars, because I think that the expression that the person puts out to the world is important and makes the whole world a more colorful place and more interesting. And I think it's actually healthy for people to express themselves and what they're interested in or what they're not interested in. You know, I think it's healthy to share that with others rather than blend in into anonymity and never share yourself. And, oh, you know, the status of your life is what you represent in your car with how much money you have, or, you know, I just think it's just so askew. Our value system is so askew, and art needs to be number one. Being yourself needs to be highly revered, much like I challenge the concept of what a car should be by doing art cars, and then by filming art cars and doing books on art cars and being an expert on art cars. I also want to challenge lots of other institutionalized ways of looking at the world. And I just think that it doesn't have to be the way it's been.
I could definitely see, like, capture what you're saying, and also see that there are individuals like yourself and, you know, like small organizations popping up in the area that are contributing to a narrative that is, really centers a creative lifestyle that one can especially live on the border, and the potential for all of the things that you're talking about of what art can do in a community. I think Douglas is a great place to house the ideas that are being talked about and manifested. So I really appreciate that you're bringing your vision, your visionary work to this community. I would love to go back in time. And I know you come from a household, both parents were creatives. Could you talk a little bit about your upbringing?
Well, from the time that, as far back as I can remember, we were encouraged by mostly our mother, and this is my brother and I, my brother Bo and myself. We were encouraged to be whoever we were going to be, like, especially when it came to art, because, and we would get a lot of accolades when we did create something. Our mom would really take to it and love it and want it and then show it off. And she was an artist herself, although she didn't get to express or make her art until after the babies were grown up and out of the house, etc. So she didn't really start to become prolific until she was in her 40s. And then she honed her ceramics. Her most of what she created were ceramics, mm-hmm. and sculptures, and they were mostly erotic. So mm-hmm. on the one hand, we had a mother who was into erotic ceramics. And then on the other hand, we had a father who was into filmmaking and photography and mostly documentary film. Mm-hmm. And so we got it from both sides. And I value that so much from both parents that they, you know, they never put us down. They were encouraging and created an environment where creativity is king, you know, and that you're rewarded for things that you create with just sort of like your parents are your biggest cheerleaders. And so it just encouraged me to do it. Now they didn't think that the art car thing was where I should dump my energy, at least for so long. And so they were always asking me, well, when are you going to grow up and get out of this art car thing? On the other hand, the fact that I just kept to it is what sort of made this whole career happen. You know, it's funny because you asked me earlier that, well, what is driving me now? Like, what is behind mm-hmm. what I'm trying to do? And I've lost both parents to cancer metastasis. And what that does is it reminds you that you yourself are mortal and that you're getting older and that you are next. And so it sort of upped the ante. I was already wrapping up my art car making part of my life before they got sick. But when they got sick and died, it really upped the ante for me to put these things to bed and preserve them. And that goes for everything my mother created and everything my father created. And everything that I created, and then everything that the friends that I've had and the artists that I respected, what they've created, and preserve them all in this place. And that's what the overview is I'm sort of driven by preserving all of this work from all of these different people and then also integrating it into a place where it lives on. Not just in a museum format, but in a public art environment. So, for example, my mother's ceramic nude fetish figure of the generic woman, which is a curvaceous, shapely woman, I took that and I cast it in bronze, and then we patinaed the bronze in 12 different colors. And then integrated these bronzes, which are about a foot tall, into the public balcony and back porch of the above the Art Car Museum. And I wanted to actually put those all around in downstairs, but it was too risque for the city of Douglas mm-hmm. and for the public here for me to put nude women around. You see, there's so many things that I want to do. I just can't get there because I'm only one guy and I don't have, unlimited means of money and time. I mean, time is the thing I really don't have. I mean, I work 12 to 15 hours a day on this bigger vision all the time. The problem is that there's other parts of this that I have to do, like remastering my father's films and doing maintenance on art cars and making them light up, and then now I'm doing the sculpture thing. So I just don't have very much time to get the ideas out, but I have the ideas. I just have to delegate and then figure it out. It'll happen. It's just going to take a while.
I just wanted to say that what you said, that you want to keep their memories alive, and the best way to do it is by preserving the art of your loved ones and the artists that were part of your life. I think that's beautiful, and I think it doesn't matter how long it takes, as long as you do it and that you have that in mind. What you're doing there, making a shrine to your mom with all of her sculptures and what she believed in, I think that's beautiful, and that you're restoring all of your dad's films. I think everyone should aim to do that, especially there are artists and their families that passed.
Thank you. And, you know, honestly, I think the, you know, with art, it's sort of like when you use objects in the artwork that have reverence, even if the public doesn't know why, it makes the whole piece shine. And so what I'd like to try to do, I mean, they do this at Burning Man too, by the way. They have a temple that they burn on Sunday night. And the temple is actually created for people to leave notes for their loved ones that have passed and to let go. And then when the fire starts and burns the temple, you can actually feel this peaceful release and transition. And it's an amazing thing to witness, but I kind of wanted to use objects from lots of different people and that have reverence to them, and then include that into what we're doing. The only thing is I really want to make things out of bronze so that they don't get destroyed in the Arizona sun. And that's the problem here, is that we really need to think about the environment we live in. It's a desert, and it's hot and it's dry. Yeah. And so metal will do better than plastic, for example, and glass will do better than plastic. So I would like to incorporate other people's loved ones and their art and things into this thing as well. And so the sculpture that I'm building, well, I guess it's a monument, actually. It's a monument that for creativity. And I'm just calling it the Eye of God because I don't know what else to call it. But basically, I saw this movie when I was 15 with my father, and it was called Ikuru by Akira Kurosawa, who's a Japanese filmmaker. And the movie Ikuru means to live. And the plot, the guy, he's in his 60s and he gets diagnosed with stomach cancer, and he's given, I think it was a year to live. First thing he does is, and his job, by the way, was to stamp the government seal on documents. And so he was very kind of robotic in doing the stamping of all these documents. And then when he was diagnosed with stomach cancer, he decided to go chase younger women and go to restaurants and live it up and go drinking and have fun. And then he realizes pretty quickly that that's very hedonistic and that he's being very selfish. And then he decides with the rest of his time he's got, which I think was about 6 months, he builds a playground in the downtown industrial Japanese city that he's in for children to play on. And he spends the rest of the movie building this thing. And then the credits roll after he dies with children playing on the playground that he created. And I was always blown away by that. And so I decided, well, you know what? I'm not going to wait around. I want to do this while I'm more agile and I'm able. So that's sort of the motivation behind this thing, is to leave behind a monument to creativity, but also a parking lot that is sort of like a new age parking lot where you really want to be. A lot of people, they park their car and they want to get away from the parking lot because it's so ugly. But I want to make a parking lot where you get inside of it and you just want to be there. And you don't want to get out of your car because it's so beautiful. And you park your body in these shrines. So where the arches touch the earth turns into a shrine for the people. And they will all be mosaiced with benches that are very well built, that are wrought iron with stained glass, and corbels that are all decorated with objects, which I'm hoping some of will come from the community, which will be created, I hope, by the community with some people that I can sort of teach mosaics and stained glass and wrought iron and all this stuff, and have people be a part of it. And then they can have pride in it, that it's a sort of like their place. That's what I'm trying to build. And we just got the first part of the foundations poured on January 4th. So that was a really big step. And now we got to do the second part of the foundations. And then it's time to put the arches up, which are big.
Wow. That sounds like it's going to take a lot of effort, a lot of community members. And well, Herod, you know that you can count me in. I would like to learn all of that.
All right, cool.
Help be part of that good, amazing public art opportunity.
Good. Excellent. Yeah, and I left out one other thing. I wanted, you know, have the, like in Ikuru, they make a playground for children to play on. Well, I would want to try to make a place where people can be intimate and romantic and have a fiber optic Wi-Fi in these shrines so they can actually do their studies. And it's going to have EV charging stations. So it'll be very futuristic and it'll have solar power, and it'll be something that I just think it'll be, I'm hoping it'll be very relaxing and you know, like a park, but an kind of like an art park.
Wow. I can't wait for it. That's so cool.
A park where you park your car and you park your body. You park your body.
Herod, I know that Burning Man is a huge part of your practice, and I know there's some filmmaking that's been going on around Burning Man. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I went to Burning Man for the first time in 1993, which was the third year out in the desert, and I brought my art car, Oh My God, which is actually in the museum. And the Art Car World Museum. And it was one of the first art cars ever at Burning Man. I was so inspired by what I experienced at Burning Man that I decided to make a movie right then and there. So I started filming more the next year, and then more and more. And I ended up filming every year since. And so I actually haven't missed a year. 2020, they didn't have it because of COVID. But I actually did film the virtual burn via the internet, which I wasn't really stoked with, but I did film it. And now I've got this. This is another mountainous, huge project, which is so big it would take probably 3 months full time just to watch the footage one time. Mm-hmm. And you know, then of course it needs to be edited, and it's just so, it's so big that I can barely wrap my mind around it, but it's probably going to be a 3 to 5 part series. And of course I filmed the evolution of the whole art car thing at Burning Man, and then the evolution of the event and how it sort of mimics in some ways the society that it was at one time protesting against or rebelling against. And then the theme of public art, you know, which is what it is. It's just there's art everywhere. And, you know, the byline of the festival used to be or still is, no spectators, because they wanted everyone to bring it, everyone to bring something to contribute to this big pie of life and celebration of art and creativity and whimsy. And, you know, so your mind is just blown. It's so wild everywhere you look that you're just completely, you're like looking at the world as a child all over again, even though you're an adult, because everything is so new and different.
I can't wait to see the docuseries of Burning Man and all that has happened throughout the years. Well, as a filmmaker, I'm pretty sure you've captured a lot of moments in that festival. Can you talk to us a little bit about, like, what's a day in Burning Man?
All right. So a typical day at Burning Man would be, let's just say you want to go for a walk, and your destination is you're going to walk out onto the playa and look at some public art. And as soon as you get your get up off of your chair, wherever you're sitting in camp, and you start to move, something happens that you didn't know was going to happen. Somebody comes into your camp who is riding a unicycle and is painted and yelling and playing music or whatever. And then you meet that person, and then they invite you to go to hear some public speaking or something in a different camp. And then you, all of a sudden, you're transported into a different place than you thought you were going. And then when you finally get back on track and you're going to go look at the art that you were set out to do, something else happens. And that's sort of what Burning Man is like. It's sort of, it's, you're just inundated by surprises. Every time you turn around, you meet a different person that's really interesting, or you see some art, or you see some fashion, or you see something that it's just amazing. And then you go on to the next thing. I mean, it's different for everybody. So I'm generalizing, and this is sort of like what my experience is, especially when filming. Like, I'm, my goal at Burning Man is to film and capture what's going on. And so a lot of times I just say, okay, to my crew, I say, you know what, we're just going to be, and we're just going to see what happens. And we go out with the camera and we just see what happens. And then invariably something happens where it's amazing to film. And then while we're filming that, for example, a billion bunny rabbit protest, which is all these rabbit, decorated rabbit people protesting the demise of carrots or something. I can't even remember what it is, but we're talking thousands of people that are dressed as rabbits, and they come out of nowhere, and they're marching with marching bands and singing and dancing and screaming. And you just get taken up in the festivity of this bizarre rabbit parade, and, or a parade of aliens. I mean, one year, a few years ago, there was a parade of aliens, and it was actually an artist from, I think he was from Russia, and he did this alien protest of humanity. And he, his whole cast was dressed as aliens, and they were walking around doing a public performance, and it was amazing.
Well, that sounds like something that you can't make up. That sounds like something I would like to experience at least one time. Janae, what do you think? We should go to Burning Man next year.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have to think of some performance art before we get there.
Yeah, definitely.
Some people say you get out of Burning Man what you bring into it. And so if you bring in, let's just say, an ideology that it's, you know, stupid, or it's no good anymore, or it's changed too much or whatever, it's going to taint your perspective of it. But if you go in there open-minded and you just see what happens, you're probably going to be, you know, pretty inspired by something. I mean, you're going to see something that turns you on, you know. There's all kinds of, like, there's a jazz camp, so they play jazz music day and night. There's rave music that goes on day and night. I mean, we're talking huge raves, and of like some of the biggest megastar rave artists are out there. Yeah. And I'm not a big raver, but I definitely have, like this last year, I filmed it because it was over the top. But there's yoga camps. There's, you know, and it's like 300 people doing yoga at sunrise against the sun. And, you know, it's really amazing. And you can volunteer too. You can actually volunteer to do all sorts of different things. You can volunteer to make the temple, for example, or make public art, an art installation or an art piece, or be a lamp lighter for a few nights where you go around the Burning Man and light the lamp towers, and you wear the lamplighter garb, which just goes over the clothes that you're already wearing, and you go and you light the city.
I look forward to the day that, you know, the film is out and we could really see it, like the history of Burning Man through your eyes. So
we're actually the guy that I'm editing my father's last film before he died, it's about a folk artist from Alabama named Butch Anthony, and the editor's name is Sheward Dyke, and he worked on my last movie, and we were going to be starting to work on the Burning Man film, but we have to finish this other film about the folk artist first. Mm-hmm. And he's actually here now in Douglas for 2 weeks editing, and so it's just I'm just so backed up on projects, but we have to finish this other movie first. And meanwhile, Burning Man, people are starting to wonder, like, oh yeah, Harrod with his camera, is he ever going to make a movie, or is he just always is that my character, the camera guy that runs around Burning Man and films everything and never makes anything?
They'll see, and it'll just be monumental because, I mean, just the history, right? The consistency. I think that's what's going to really make it special.
Okay, Harrod, are you ready for random questions?
Yep.
What would you rather be for the rest of your life? A clown from Killer Clowns from Outer Space, or a car from your Our Car World Museum?
So you give me a choice of being a clown or a car?
Yes.
I'll be the clown. Clown.
Why?
Because I'm alive. I'll still be alive. If I'm a car, I'm kind of being a killer clown is actually pretty interesting because some people actually like clowns and they gravitate to clowns, but some people are scared to death of clowns and they run when they see you. So I never know what to expect when I'm in doing killer clown stuff. Like it's always different. And
our audience don't know, like, what's your history like with Killer Clowns from Outer Space? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Back when I was in college, I was wanting to be an actor for a while, and I ended up trying out for lots of movies, and I took acting classes, and I ended up going to be an extra for a movie in Santa Cruz called Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And it turned out I was supposed to be in a crowd scene, but then I was also a college basketball player, and I'm 6'4". And I was in really good shape, and they looked at me and they're like, damn, you're pretty strong. Do you think you could wear a costume of a killer clown? And I said, yeah, sure. So they had me do a bunch of rehearsing, and then they liked the way that I walked and animated the clown costume. So they asked me if I was busy for the next 2 weeks, and I said no, because I was out of college. And then I got the gig, seven killer clowns, and then 25 years later I get a call from this guy, and he's like, are you Harrod Blank? I said, yeah. And he goes, well, I want to be your agent. And I said, what? And he goes, you were in Killer Clowns from Outer Space, weren't you? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, I want to be your agent and represent you. And I said, why? And he says, well, there's people out there that want your signature. And I said, oh, really? I said, I don't think so. And he goes, I've already been asked for it. And I'm like, oh my God. So then I agreed to do it. And then the movie has blown up to the point where I'm going to 5 or 6 horror conventions a year. And with the other cast of Killer Clowns, and we're like this little weird Killer Clowns family now. We go to the horror events, which are really bizarre because it's all these horror stars and Jason and, you know, all the different, you know, horror stars, and it's very surreal. Really, really surreal.
So interesting. Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh man.
What a
There's
story.
So much.
Yeah. So if you get an opportunity to be in a movie, even as an extra, like I said, just have an open mind and do it and see what happens, and you never know where it'll go.
Thank you so much for joining us on Artist Stories, Herod. It's really been such an interesting, dynamic conversation. Learned so much about you and just your life's trajectory, many surprises. So thank you for that. And just, I can't wait to see what's next and seeing all these projects flourish.
Excellent. Well, we'll just chip away at everything, and one day they'll come to fruition.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. All right. This has been Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to the full podcast, visit kxci.org. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org.
Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. Music for this podcast was created by Jonathan Rodriguez.